So I sleep 8 to 9 hours a day, not because I'm lazy or because I don't have enough to do, but because I believe by investing that time in my recovery, I will be able to do in 10 hours during the day what it would have taken me 12 or 14 hours.
Hi, everyone. This is The Podium, and I'm Dr. Kevin Sprouse. Our podcast originated as a resource for my practice, where I work with professional athletes and high-performing individuals from around the world. Today, it has become a forum for an even greater audience, and we welcome everyone as we discuss the principles of performance and then disseminate pertinent, actionable information with our patients in mind. One thing to note before we begin, the content of this podcast is not meant as medical advice. This is for general informational purposes only. Welcome to The Podium. Today, I got to have a great conversation with Matteo Franceschetti, the co-founder and CEO of 8Sleep. I think people have probably heard me mention 8Sleep on the podcast in the past, as it's one of the very few things that I uniformly recommend to patients. And to be fair, it doesn't have to be 8Sleep. There are other devices that do this. This was in no way an advertisement. They didn't sponsor this podcast. I just reached out because I was very interested to talk to him about his path to not just founding the company, but more importantly, understanding why this was an important technology to bring to market and some of the things that they have learned about sleep and about high performers since they have brought it to market. It's interesting to me that this is a device that is used by some of the top performers in business and across sport, regardless of the type of sport. And we even talk about the fact that a lot of athletes now request or even require that they travel with this because the effect is so noticeable. So again, it was a great conversation with Matteo. I hope you all enjoy it, and feel free to send some questions or comments back this way. Maybe we can get him back on the podcast in the future. All right, Matteo, thanks for joining. It's good to talk to you again. Thanks for making the time.
Of course. I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. So I want to start out by, of course, I'm most interested in hearing not just about 8Sleep as a device, but kind of your journey that got you there, your appreciation for the importance of sleep, how you settled on 8Sleep as a way to really push that. But I kind of want to go back a little bit and start just at the beginning. You were born in Italy. Is that correct?
Yeah. Born and raised in Italy.
Yeah. Did you grow up playing sports there?
Yeah, I did a lot of sports. I did ski races. Then most of my time as a teenager was as a tennis athlete, so tennis tournaments. And then I also raced with go-karts and cars.
Oh, nice. Very well-rounded. Lots of sport.
Yeah, lots of sports.
And academically, as you moved through school, were you competing on a very high level, or was it just recreational? I was just recreational, so I don't mean to downplay that, but just curious.
You mean in terms of academic results?
No, from sports standpoint, yeah.
So in Italy, it's very different, meaning there is no connection between your college or your high school and sport. They're completely disconnected. And actually, professors, they are not happy when you spend too much time doing sports, because then you don't study. And so actually, you are, I would say disadvantaged if you do sport, because they literally don't care. And they don't even talk to your coach. They're two completely different worlds. And so I was doing sport at a competitive level for tennis since when I was 12 to when I was 17, 18. And then I started racing with go-karts when I was 16, and I started racing with cars when I was 21. Because in Italy, you really graduate from college that you are 23 years old if you're fast. So it's, it takes a bit longer compared to the US. And so there was an overlap with my time at college. But again, my college professors didn't care about any of my sports activities.
So something like an IMG Academy wouldn't really work in Italy. It's It's, it's a totally different concept. Honestly, from an academic standpoint, that's probably a better way to approach it, to have academics very focused on academics, and the professors don't care what else you're doing because the priority is learning.
It is true, but what happens is it doesn't create any incentive for you to keep going as an athlete. And that is also why at a certain point I started giving up. And I would say none of my college mates were athletes of any sort. And I still think sport is so important in those years in terms of mindset and what you can learn. And then I think for me personally, is when I look back, probably I could have played the tennis at the college level here in the US, but I was not even aware of that as an opportunity. And so I stopped playing tennis at the competitive level that I was 17, 18, but my body developed fairly late. And so I was not able to use those years, let's say from 18 to 22, when my body finally was more, you know, an adult body, to really fully develop my game. Mm-hmm. And when I look back, I think that that is a bit of a pity.
It is. And you make a really good point about the mindset too. Having an athlete's mindset can be really beneficial for academics.
Absolutely.
And I mean, this is it's a conversation we've been having in my house over the last couple of weeks with my older kids. That the drive that you bring to sport and that mindset that you learn in sport to always be working to do better in practice, but also on your own, finding ways you can improve, that plays out in the classroom and vice versa. So,
And also in your professional career, we see it at 8 Sleep. We have a couple of people, they come from sport, and they have that mindset where they just, you know, they want more, they want to get things done, they want to be successful, you know, they have a drive. It's something unique. And I think I always say particularly startups are the closest thing to sport in the business world, because there are ups and downs. The company can die, you need to save it, which is the equivalent of an injury. So you need to come back. Mm-hmm. Every day is different. You lose and win. And so if you don't have that mindset, it's really hard to go through everything you have to face in a startup in the early days.
I really like that analogy. That's it's so true. And I've seen it play out so many times. Yeah. So academically, I was going to say finished university, but in Italy, you actually, a law degree is part of university. It's not like a second step here. Correct. Same with medicine or other professional degrees. You focused on law as a career. Is that correct?
Yeah. I graduated from law in Italy. Then I moved to the US. I went to San Diego to study a bit of business and improve my English. I didn't really speak English or proper English until when I was 23, 24 years old. Mm-hmm. So I spent a year there. Because there were two requirements to join the best law firms in Europe. First, you need to graduate with honor. And second, you need to speak English perfectly because all the transactions are pan-European or international. And so at the beginning of my college career, I was not doing really well in college because I was just focused on sport. And then I read this article about these law firms and I say, okay, I want to be one of these guys. But there were these two requirements. And that is when my mindset, my sports mindset shifted. And I said, okay, if I need these two things to get a job, I'm going to get it done. And so I graduated with honor. And then I moved to the US. I learned English. I started applying. And then I got the job that I wanted.
I think that's knowing what the end goal is so important to being successful with the steps along the way. And oftentimes in school or lots of endeavors, I mean, businesses too, if you don't have a very clear idea of where you want to be, where you're going, it's easy to just kind of waver a bit and you know, you try hard on tests and you study, but not with any intention. And so when you figure out what that intention is, then you can really be off to the races, as we say. So did you end up going back to Europe to work in law firms there?
Yeah, then I did 5 years in two of the largest law firms in the world, between Milan and London. They are both British law firms. Mm-hmm. And then the last year, I started working on my first company, my first startup in the night. So I was working from, let's say, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. at the law firm, and then from 10 p.m. to 3, 4 a.m. on my startup. And within a year, the startup made enough money to cover my salary. And then is when I decided to quit my job as a lawyer, and I became an entrepreneur.
What was that first company?
I was in cleantech. I was in solar. So we were developing large utility scale solar plants across Europe.
Okay. When did you start to get interested in sleep and the performance benefits that come from it?
That was around 10 years ago. So it was while I was running my second startup, which was in the US, it was still in solar. I started first being intrigued by tech, so by software and technology. And so I started investing as an angel investor in the space. But then I still had this part of me like an athlete that it was always about recovery. And then I'm also obsessed with time efficiency. And so I started wondering why I spend a third of my life on a piece of dumb foam. But Elon Musk is taking me to Mars. There is technology everywhere. And then we just pretend I go to bed and I wake up fully refreshed. It just didn't make sense. How can I get more out of that time? And that is when I really started looking into sleep and I connected it to recovery and technology.
Were you still playing sport or do you still play sport recreationally?
So I substantially stopped everything when I was 22, 23. And now I play a lot of sports. So I had like almost a 10 years gap. When yeah. I was not doing anything and I was still convinced of being an athlete, but now sometimes I look at pictures and I say, oh man, I was not really in good shape. And then at a certain point, something clicked again. And now I'm obsessed with everything, like almost biohacking from fasting to ice bath, sauna, keto diet. So everything you can think of, I'm doing it or I have tried it. And now I do a lot of sports. I literally train every day at least 2 hours.
What are your primary sports now, your primary modes of training?
Is tennis and paddle. I don't know if you know, paddle is something in the middle between squash and tennis, very high intensity. And so I started playing tournaments again. I have a tournament tonight at 8 p.m. Yeah, so I play tournaments on Thursday night and during the weekend if I'm in Miami. And then I play tennis. I have a bunch of friends. One of them was former number 150 in the world. So I can have a real match. Training. Yeah, a real match.
I think it's interesting what you say about that period of time where the athletic part kind of faded away. And I see that often with patients, that they have that period where they focus on something else. Work becomes a focus. Often to the point that it's a unilateral focus, is the one thing that they do. And oftentimes people lament that they lose balance. I'm not so sure that's always a bad thing. I think sometimes it's really good to buckle down and put everything you can toward a certain goal or success. And oftentimes that's early in our career where you just have to, you have to do everything you can to get your foot indoors and make it work. But then when you have the time and the wherewithal to come back around and start to focus on whether it's health or sleep or performance, that's also very important. What I like that you mentioned there, though, what I'm getting at is you noticed that with sleep, there was an issue with efficiency. And so it didn't have to be one or the other. If you were able to improve the efficiency of sleep, then somebody who is going really hard in a corporate world could take advantage of the maybe 6 hours they have to sleep if they don't have eight and get the most out of it and keep going at a higher level. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, the way I think of myself as a CEO is I'm an athlete and my job is being the CEO of a company, right? Mm-hmm. I literally have that mindset. And so everything I do, when I do biohacking stuff, keto, fasting, or even my training, everything is designed to maximize my performance as a CEO. And so I sleep 8 to 9 hours a day, not because I'm lazy or because I don't have enough to do, but because I believe by investing that time in my recovery, I will be able to do in 10 hours during the day what it would have taken me 12 or 14 hours. Yeah. And even when I think of training now, I always think of myself, again, as an athlete. And so I'm training to be a peak performance in my job. I feel better. I have more dopamine. I have more energy. I eat healthier, which means I don't feel groggy or sleepy at 2 p.m. So everything is designed around being the best CEO I can be. And I just use these levers in nutrition, fitness, and sleep to maximize that performance.
I love that. And that's a wonderful way to think about it. And very similar to the conversation we have with pro athletes on what they can do to set themselves up best to succeed. And that realization that the same things that are important for a Tour de France cyclist or an F1 driver or whoever, those things play out in business as well, in the boardroom. And we can really learn from those folks how best to set up our days. Those of us that are not going to get a paycheck from sport, we can still use a lot of the same tenets to improve what we do. So when you started getting interested in sleep, how did you focus in? I guess I should step back a minute. For those who aren't familiar with 8Sleep, kind of introduce the technology first. This 8Sleep makes I'll let you describe it in depth, but it basically it's a device that allows control of the temperature of the bed, primarily cooling, but not always. Describe it a bit.
Yeah. So we invented a technology that you can install on your bed and it will improve your sleep. It looks like a mattress cover that goes wraps your mattress and goes underneath your bed sheets, heats and cools each side of the bed at a different temperature. So if you sleep with a partner, you can have your own temperature and your partner can have a different temperature. And then it has sensors. So we are able to track your heart rate, your heart rate variability, your respiration, your sleep quality, your sleep stages. And based on this information, we automatically adjust your body temperature during the night. So when you hear people saying, oh, you should sleep at 68 degrees during the night, is wrong. It might be right for an hour, but it's wrong for the other 7 hours. And so what we do is we use technology, artificial intelligence, machine learning to adjust in real time your body temperature thousands of times per night to maximize your sleep. And what we see in average, you can get up to 25%-ish better sleep. And athletes, you know it well from Formula One drivers, cyclists, the Lakers, the 49ers, all of them, they sleep on our product.
Yeah. I was at an event this morning that was a charity breakfast, and the speaker was a professional athlete, and it was for the American Heart Association. And he just happened to mention that one of the things he does for recovery that is so important for him is he now travels with 8Sleep.
No way.
Yeah.
No, that's cool.
And I see it, I mean, in PGA players, Major League Baseball players, on our EF cycling team, we used, all the riders have it at home, and we took it to the Tour de France last year and are looking forward to doing it again this year. I don't frequently talk about a device or a supplement or an intervention or anything in almost unilaterally good terms. It's always very much in a certain situation, it could be helpful. The marketing is overblown, but here's how we might think about it. With temperature control of the bed, I really have seen uniformly good results. Like everyone has benefited from it. And that's why I think it's such a remarkable thing to talk about. And this is not an advertisement. This is more the talk about the science around it. I think it's hands down one of the most effective things that people can implement outside of those basics, like you talked about, nutrition, training, and even sleep. You know, if you're only sleeping 4 hours a night, or you don't pay any attention to your sleep consistency, those things probably need to get that under control before buying a device. But a very close follow there is to start to pay attention to something like this. How did you start to play with this idea? What made you think, oh, if we could just control this aspect of the environment, I think we're going to see big gains?
Yeah. So our first device as a company was still a mattress cover, but was substantially just a sleep and health tracker, right? And so we were able to track your sleep quality, sleep stages, and heart rate and respiration. And we sold almost 10,000 units in pre-order. So that product was fairly successful. But when I was talking to customers, and I spend a lot of time talking to customers, they say, oh, this is really cool, but does it cool? And I say, no, it doesn't. And you started seeing that, I don't know, literally 8, 9 out of 10 people was always asking about that for different reasons. Some people sleep hot. Some people wanted to optimize their sleep based on temperature because there was already a lot of research and clinical evidence. Some others, they just fight with their partner because they have different preferences. And so I started looking into all the, you know, the clinical studies and research. And I understood that it was not just something that customers really wanted, but it was something that is proven to work because you have a circadian cycle and your body temperature already changes. So we're not reinventing the wheel. We're just helping your body to do what it's supposed to do. And so at that point, we were able to raise money from one of the best investors in Silicon Valley to build the product. We built it, and it was a really big success. We have sold hundreds of thousands of units in just a matter of a few years.
Yeah, and you have, some of the top performers in the world using this, as we mentioned, from F1 drivers, athletes in all different sports, CEOs, entertainers across the board. And I know you've had conversations with these folks along the way as they've implemented it. You've probably had many really interesting interactions. I'm curious, what have you learned that you see some of these high performing individuals do that is common across all of them? Like what is some stuff that you can kind of point to that we all should be doing based on the success these folks have had?
Just in sleep or in general?
Both maybe. The question was in sleep, but I'd certainly like to hear in general too.
I think particularly in sleep, there is this obsession, right? I think this is a trend that changed over the past 10 years. If you go back, I don't know, 20 years ago, there was the tough entrepreneur who was saying, oh, I sleep only 4 hours per night. I'm the tough person here. I don't need more hours. I need to just work harder.
I've been
there. Now I always say sleep deprivation is the new smoking. And that applies also to athletes, right? If you want to recover, if you want to have a career like LeBron James, you need to sleep a lot. And the reason is there is plenty of evidence that your body needs that time to recover physically, but also mentally store information, clean up information in your brain. And so if you're an athlete and you need to nail certain movements, you need that time just for your own brain. And so then you start seeing athletes. I mean, some of them, they're very public, right? So there is the information out there from Lewis Hamilton to the quarterback of the 49ers. We didn't even know he had one of our products and he sleeps on the product. Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg. And so there is really this concept where people, doesn't matter if you want to sleep 6 hours or 8 hours, you want to get the most out of that. It's part of the mindset of these people, top athletes or top entrepreneurs. And I think the beauty of what we do is because we don't ask you to do anything, just go to bed as you have done for the rest of your life, you will just wake up hopefully 20, 30% more refreshed. Why not? As long as you can afford it. Mm-hmm. And all these people are obsessed, and we see a lot of athletes now traveling, even Formula One drivers. There are some that put in their contract that the team has to move their pod wherever they go and install it because they want to make sure that they get the best possible sleep to have the best performance the following day when there is the start of the race and it's a matter of milliseconds.
Yeah. I think when someone has experienced really good sleep, especially if they're coming from somewhere where they gave up some benefit in sleep. I mean, you mentioned, I've said it before, when I was in medical school and training, I got 4 hours a night. Sometimes I didn't sleep, right?
Yeah.
And I thought I was fine. I could get by. And then when I got to the point where I was getting 7, 8 hours per night of really good sleep, then you realize, oh my gosh, this is what I was missing, right? And so you get these folks who, are performing at the very top of their game and they sleep at home in an environment that allows them to get this incredible rest, they realize very quickly they want to have it on the road too. And I've seen this in the athletes we work with. If there's one complaint, if you want to call it that, about eight sleep, it's that they don't have it on the road. And then we figure out how to make that happen. But
that is the biggest aha moment with all our customers.
Yeah.
It's the first time they travel, because you get used to temperature control, right? It's so natural that then it seems the norm. But then you travel. I just came back this morning from New York, right? And I was in an hotel. And when you're there, you just sleep on this dumb bed that doesn't adjust the temperature, and you just miss your pod. That is the biggest aha moment for all our customers.
It's true. I mean, I've actually had to have multiple conversations with patients to remind them that the time they are away from their pod is not worse because they have their pod at home. It's just a perception issue. You're just back to the baseline of if you didn't have it at all.
Yeah.
Because you have to really reframe it for them. And then, like I said, they start figuring out how to travel with it. The PGA Tour has these trucks that go event to event, and the athletes can buy bins to keep their stuff in. And now if you go through those, you're going to find, eight sleep in those. Major League Baseball teams traveling with them, Tour de France teams. So I think it's really evident to these high performers when they can find something that gives them more than just like a 0.5% there, or, a 0.25% here, but something that is a real step forward, they hold on tight and they don't let go of it. Like, that's something they need to have. And I imagine you see that in the business world as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is why I know a lot of our customers, they ask us to do partnership with hotels or athletes. They just ask their trainers to move it around. When competition is so tight, right, and a millisecond makes a difference, or a 3-point shot makes the difference, you cannot leave any stone unturned.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Dr. Sherry Ma at Stanford?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've had Sherry on the podcast before, and I've known her for a while. Her research points out the importance of that, looking at the Stanford collegiate basketball team years ago, and then some of the stuff she's done with NBA players, where if they increase the amount of sleep that they are able to get night to night, presumably increasing the quality, the rim, then their 3-point and free throw percentages go up somewhere around 9%, which is a massive improvement. And these are, in one case, she's talked about names. I won't mention names, but in one case, it was a guy who was already an NBA All-Star. So it's not like he was a poor player, but he improves his sleep and he gains 9% on his, I believe that one was three-point shooting average. And so if you can find ways to harness that as an athlete, like you said, not just the musculoskeletal recovery that comes during deep sleep, which is hugely important, but the REM component that allows you to ingrain motor patterns and really, really gain from that practice you're doing day to day. It's a win-win. And I'm not saying, again, it has to be eight sleep. Anything that you can find that's going to improve your sleep, that you pay attention to, that moves that needle, is going to be massively important for performance. And we know temperature is a huge part of that.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you should think of sleep like a performance enhancer or a performance enhanced drug. That is literally what sleep is. Even for me, when I have the board meeting, that day I sleep longer than any other day. Just because I want to be as sharp as possible mentally. And I make sure I go to the gym in the morning, right? There is a routine, and everything is designed to maximize my performance at 11 a.m., 2 p.m., whatever is the time of the board meeting.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point. Having that routine that you know results in the benefit you're after, right? And for each of us, it may look a little bit different, but that's something you can play with and figure out what sets you up for success. You and I spoke a few months ago as you were doing research for a book on sleep. And I'm curious, with the folks you've spoken to, presumably during, you know, multiple kind of interviews, informal or formal, and the folks that you know through the business world and using 8Sleep, what are some of the key takeaways you've come away from, maybe as things that, that listeners can do, but more importantly, things they may not know about sleep that can kind of convince them that, you know, this is a really important thing for them to pay attention to?
Yeah. There are a couple of tricks that are fairly simple that people can use and have a massive impact on their sleep. One is alcohol. Alcohol is going to impact your sleep quality. Call it around 20%, to oversimplify. It's different. It depends on how much alcohol you had. It depends on you, whatever. But oversimplified, if you have alcohol, you go to sleep, the quality, your sleep quality will drop around 20%. And it will accelerate your heart rate and it will lower your HRV, which is negative, right? Mm-hmm. And so if in my case, I stopped drinking 2019, I think. You don't have to stop drinking completely. But you should try to stop drinking at least 3-4 hours before going to bed. Even just that makes a difference. The number of drinks you have makes a difference. So again, you can still have your beer, you can still have drinks with your friends, but if you just pay a bit of attention to that, particularly during the week, it can have a massive impact on your sleep quality. Yeah. That is one. It will also change your body temperature. So we see that people that had alcohol, they will start cooling down their bed more. The other one that I see massively on my body is I really hate to do sport in the evening. So I hate when I have like a tournament like tonight at 8 p.m. Yeah. Because I come back around 10:30, 11, and I literally can't fall asleep until 1. There is the dopamine, there is my heart rate is accelerated, my body is still dissipating heat, all that. And so tomorrow on Friday, I will not be at peak performance. And so if I can, I train in the morning. You can train anytime in the morning, early afternoon. But if you can avoid after, I would say 6 p.m. The other big thing, very basic, is consistency. So for me, it has always been a problem to wake up early. But if you start waking up always at the same time, your biological clock will adjust. And then doesn't matter if it's 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 5:30, your body will just be designed around that time. And even the few nights that you go to sleep later than usual, it will still wake up at that time.
Yeah.
And you don't feel groggy.
Yeah.
The last one is what they call thermal shocks. So if you have a sauna and an ice bath, that is the pinnacle. Very few people have that. But if you could do a sauna and an ice bath and do it each of them twice, that would be great to really relax you. But you can do something similar by switching between a hot bath and a cold shower. And so just creating this contrast between heat and cold for a couple of times, it will really relax you and help you sleep better.
And when do you do that? How close to bedtime?
In my case, usually I do before dinner just because I like it there. It relaxes me. And sometimes if I have time, I even put 5-10 minutes of kind of stillness. I call it stillness. So I just sit there thinking of whatever I want. But for example, Peter Attia, he does it right before bed. And so he does a sauna, ice bath, and then he goes to bed. So I would say as long as you do it in the second part of the day, as close as possible to bed. And it can be just a hot and cold shower or a hot bath and a cold shower is more than enough.
Yeah. It's another one of those things. I think when you mentioned the timing, playing with it for yourself as an individual is really important because some people have a pretty robust cortisol response to the cold, and that may cause them to have a harder time falling asleep. And so if they spike their cortisol from jumping into a cold plunge, or maybe one that's too cold for them based on what they're acclimatized to, they may have a counter effect to what they're going to or going for. And so, you know, doing these things there's an individual component. And I think starting slow or starting low and going slow, you know, if you're going to do cold plunge before bed, start with it cool if you've never done it.
Exactly.
Don't jump into an ice-filled tub, but just you know, move that direction and kind of see how it impacts you. There's a lot, if individuals just watch social media and whatever else, they see people doing the extreme versions of these things and they don't recognize that they've been acclimated to that over months or years. So
yeah. And more than anything, what I have noticed in my own experience is, yeah, you can listen to different people. They do different things. At the end of the day, you need to find something that works for you and that you believe you can sustain for a long period of time. So it's better to be 80% perfect, but very consistent, than trying to be 100% perfect and then you drop the ball after a week.
Yeah, so true. I mean, that goes for anything. If you can be 80% perfect and 95% consistent in that, you're going to go so far.
I agree.
But if you give up consistency, it's just a losing battle. You can't exactly. Do that. The other thing that I think is important, coming back to this idea of optimizing your sleep environment and routine at home and then traveling to a competition or a board meeting or whatever's important, is it's okay to be in a position in an environment that's not optimized, right? It doesn't make you weaker. What I think is important to realize is that if you spend the most of your time in an environment that is ideal for you, you build resilience. And then you get to a place where maybe you don't have your 8 sleep, or you've got to stay up late for business functions, and you maybe have a glass or two of alcohol when you wouldn't normally. You can reframe that as this, recognize that you've spent weeks in an environment that you control, building resilience, putting yourself in a good position. So when you get there, you can still function, right? Yeah. It's still worthwhile. And so I think a lot of times the downside of consistency, and I'm still a huge fan of it, it's the most important thing. The downside though, is you have to recognize that everything doesn't fall apart. The floor doesn't fall out from under you. If you lose that, you've built yourself to a place where you can tolerate it. And in that regard, hopefully you can be in a better mental space as well.
Yeah, it's almost like a bank account, right? You can increase your savings and you try to increase your savings, your health savings over a certain period of time. And then it's fine for a couple of days. Then you just use some of those savings. You will still have a benefit.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way to think about it. One of the things I've been really interested in in using the pod myself and with athletes is how well the tracking, the biometrical tracking works. I'll be honest, when I first put it on my bed, I thought I was interested in the cooling part, and I kind of thought the other part was just going to not really work and it was going to be there, but I was going to pay attention to my other wearables. And I mean, I've used it for a year and a half now, and the tracking component is incredibly accurate. And I say that benchmarking it to the other wearables that I have that I've tried it with. It is right there with Aura and Whoop, Garmin. That was shocking to me. I just for my own curiosity, I'm interested to know how you guys were able to do that when you're just lying on top of it and there's, you know, fabric between the sleeper and whatever sensors are monitoring this stuff.
Yeah. The beauty of our technology is, as you say, you don't have to wear anything, right? And so right now, compared to medical grade devices, we are at 99% accuracy in tracking your heart rate. And I think it's 95, 96 at tracking your HRV. And sometimes, even if I'm part of 8 sleep, I'm still shocked by the fact that without you wearing anything, just going to bed as you did for the rest of your life, now your bed is able to substantially match the accuracy of a medical grade device. Without you wearing anything, right? It's pretty shocking what technology can do. And oversimplified, there are these micro sensors that you can find or feel in the device, and they work like a stethoscope. It's a Wi-Fi connected stethoscope. The obviously there is software that translates the vibration into a certain signal, which could be heart rate variability, or sleep stages. But at the end of the day, if I was explaining it to my grandma, I would just say it's a Wi-Fi connected stethoscope. And that is how we can pick all this information. We also see your respiration, which is really interesting. Obviously, it was very interesting during COVID, but that will unlock things like even snoring and sleep apnea for us. We can see atrial fibrillation, we can see cardiovascular diseases, and then we see everything about your sleep.
Have you picked up any cases of atrial fibrillation?
Yeah, we see cases of arrhythmia. We are not an FDA-approved device, so we cannot tell you. Yeah. But we definitely see those, which becomes also at a certain point a moral problem. Obviously, we don't know who is who, right?
Yeah.
We respect, as a result, the privacy protection, but there could be user X and Y with certain events happening and we cannot disclose it.
Yeah. That I find personally very interesting. I've had AFib, had an ablation, it would actually picked it up first on a wearable that I was using at the time. But I think that would be
a message from a customer a few months ago that he wrote me directly and he said, "You saved my life." And substantially his metrics were upside down. He went straight to ER. They found a disease, a problem. He got the surgery and that surgery saved his life. And wow. I think started with aid sleep. So one of the things we track and we discuss inside the company is how many lives we have saved and how many lives we want to save, which is a million lives.
Yeah, that's incredible. And it's not hyperbole. I mean, I truly believe that these types of monitoring devices, especially as the FDA figures out how to allow some of the insights to be shared with patients, but doing it in a way that's responsible. And, you know, there's hurdles there. I get that. But I think there's a ton of health benefit to be gained beyond just the recovery and sleep and all that, you know, that's all very important, but I think there's, you know, a real health improvement, goal here that can be reached. Last question I have for you, and then, I'll let you go. I know you're very busy and I appreciate your time. Having kind of solved the issue around bed temperature and responsive monitoring and control of bed temperature, are there any like next steps or next things that you're interested in? Maybe not even from a company standpoint, but that you look at very early stage and say, this is something from a sleep standpoint that we need to get our heads around and find the next solution for.
Yeah, of course. So first we think in two buckets. The first one is sleep and the second is preventative health, right? Mm-hmm. So because our goal as a company is to compress your sleep. What if you could sleep only 6 hours and get more rest than when you were sleeping 8 hours? And second is to save your life. So in the sleep bucket, there is snoring and sleep apnea, which are areas that we want to tackle, and we will. And then we want to get into light and noise, air temperature, air quality, and oxygen levels. So imagine if you could sleep in a solution that is substantially an altitude tent where there is mountain air quality, thermoregulated, and this is obviously matched with your pod. In terms of preventative health, we have a lot of longitudinal data now because our product is a product that you install and you don't remove it. Even if you don't open the app, we still have your data. And so we can come back to you even 1 year from now, 2 years from now, when we start seeing a change in your heart rate. And maybe there will be the opportunity to predict certain cardiovascular diseases or the development of snoring and sleep apnea. And that is the long-term vision, right? So probably the next 5 years is more focused on sleep, and then the next 15 years is really focused on saving lives and unlocking preventative health.
That's fantastic. I love it. Well, Matteo, thank you for taking the time to come on and talk to us about sleep and the way that you've been able to, through your company, impact how hundreds of thousands of people are sleeping. I really appreciate it, and I hope we get to talk again in the future.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Podium. To hear more, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram, where I am at Dr. Kevin Sprouse. That's at Dr. Kevin Sprouse. The podcast posts at the_podium_podcast. You can also find and follow me on Strava. The content of this podcast is meant for general informational and educational purposes only, and does not constitute medical advice. no doctor-patient relationship is formed. All listeners should speak with their doctor or medical practitioner before implementing any change in their healthcare regimen. If you're currently a patient at Podium, then you have an established doctor-patient relationship with me, and I'm happy to discuss this with you. If you're not currently a patient at Podium, nothing in this recording establishes a doctor-patient relationship between us, nor does it constitute the practice of medicine, nor the dissemination of medical advice. Should you implement any information contained herein without consulting your own physician, you do so at your own risk. The Podium Podcast is a Palm Tree Podco production. Our executive producer is Anthony Palmer, and the associate producer is Garrett Wright. Thanks to our digital team, Emily Miles and Caitlin Krings. The content for this episode was created by the team at The Podium.